Welcome to another MyTunes podcast with me, Mark Tiley.
Mark Tiley, the nation's station, Manx Radio.
My MyTunes guest this week has been on your iPad, on your computer, on your radio, on your smart device a lot over the past almost 2 years, and probably has been in a media spotlight more than she would have liked. Please welcome to MyTunes Dr. Henrietta Ewart. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for inviting me.
And I promise you, not too much COVID on this.
I will be very grateful.
But we will have we'll have medical things and we'll have musical things. And you've already shared your choices with me. Dear listener, you're going to love the choices. Diverse. Is that a sort of part of your life? Diverse interests?
Yes, I think it probably is. Yes. And also, I kind of gave thought to things that had been important to me at different points in my life to give it a bit of a linear narrative, if you like.
I want to go back into you growing up and thinking about becoming a doctor. Was there a moment, or was it just something that happened by accident? How did you become a doctor?
I suddenly decided at the age of 14 that that's what I'd like to do. And I can actually remember the moment when I thought that is what I would like to do, but I couldn't really tell you exactly why, because I suspect at that age my understanding of being a doctor was probably fairly limited. And of course, I would never have realised quite what a broad church medicine actually is. I mean, the variety of careers you can have following a medical degree is quite extraordinary. And I certainly didn't appreciate that at 14. But at 14, and it would have been about the time when we were supposed to be choosing what we needed to do for O-levels. So obviously they were trying to get us to think about what we might be wanting to do subsequent to that. And that's when I thought, you know, medicine, I think, is the career path for me.
Oxford University?
Yes.
And was it the Middlesex Hospital Medical School?
It was, yes.
Good experience?
Very good experience. Very different experiences. I have to say, I feel incredibly blessed to have been at Oxford. The London Hospital Medical Schools were great, and I had 3 great years at the Middlesex, but you didn't get the breadth that you got at Oxford, where you were mixing with people who were doing, you know, classics, Japanese studies, a whole wealth of things that you would otherwise never come into contact with. Whereas, of course, in a teaching hospital where it was just other medical students or allied health professions, it tended just to be a bit narrower, perhaps. So I feel very fortunate to have had both experiences. I think that was the best of both worlds.
I think as a layperson, as in not a medical person, I've heard more mentions of Oxford University, Imperial College and Cambridge and all the research centres more over this COVID period than ever before.
Yeah.
Which shows how much work has been going on in these establishments to get us where we are.
Yeah.
Music, was it part of your growing up?
Yes, it was. I mean, obviously, I first started listening to music, I suppose, in the 60s and then the 70s. My dad was a great jazz fan, so a lot of that kind of music. And then as I got older, I'd start going out with friends to local gigs, which was where I first encountered Ian Dury, who at that time was part of Kilburn and the High Roads. And we used to go up Tally-ho Corner, the Tally-ho pub, where he was quite a regular, as were others. So, yes, that would have been my first introduction to music.
Just going back to studying medicine, where did you refine what you were going to be? And in fact, if you could tell us what area you specialised in.
Right, well, that was kind of a slow development. I started medicine at Oxford with a very open mind, not knowing what specialty I might want to go into. When I was at the Middlesex, I was very much gravitating towards orthopaedic surgery because I loved both the, you know, the practical side of that and the kind of intellectual side. And we had a consultant who specialised in primary bone tumours. And a lot of that was around trying to develop prosthetics for people who had to lose large parts or all of a limb due to a tumour. And that very much appealed for a while. And while I was at the Middlesex, oddly enough, and I suppose it sowed a seed that didn't germinate until quite a while later, but part of our training we used to do out at the central Middlesex, out in sort of West London. And I remember the community medicine module, as it was called then, was led by a doctor who had for most of his career been a chest physician, respiratory physician. And I remember very clearly one session with him where he started off saying, actually, the Clean Air Act did more to improve respiratory health than anything I did in my lifetime. And that kind of sowed a seed that made me think, actually, there is something about getting up to that population level in a way that is different from trying to keep doing things for individuals, but not having the impact that you could have if you could change the quality of everybody's air, to pick up on that example, rather than just trying to do what you can do at individual level. Anyway, I sort of carried on, graduated, obviously, then did a stint in the RAF. And it was when I was coming out of the RAF and thinking, where do I want to go now? Because I'd still been a generalist in the RAF. I'd done a selection of hospital jobs and general practice jobs. So I needed to think where I wanted to go career-wise after that. And it was at that point that thinking about going into public health medicine started to crystallise. So I applied for the West Midlands training scheme for that and got on it and have been working in public health ever since.
We will talk a lot more about that migration and, of course, your arrival on the Isle of Man later in the week. Let's have our first piece of music, Henriette.
Right, my first track is Fats Waller, Ain't Misbehaving.
Oh, what a classic. And what's the reason behind this?
The reason for that, as I touched on earlier, is that my dad was a great jazz fan. This was one he used to sing. There were quite a number he used to sing. Georgia on My Mind, that was another one. And What'll I Do When You Are Far Away, that was another one. But those are a bit dour, so I thought we'd go for something a bit more upbeat, and hence Fats Waller and Ain't Misbehaving, which was also a favourite of my grandma, whom I was also very fond, and also my mum, who is going to be 100, touch wood and God willing, in November. So I shall have to play it again for her. I'll see if she still enjoys it.
No one to walk with, but I'm happy on the shelf. Ain't misbehaving, saving my love for you, for you, for you, for you. I know for certain the one I love. I'm through with flirting, it's you that I'm thinking of. Ain't misbehaving, saving my love for you. Like Jack Horner in the corner, don't go nowhere, what do I care? Your kisses are worth waiting for. Leave me, I don't stay out late, no place to go. I'm home about eight, just me and my radio. Ain't misbehaving, saving all my love for you.
This week on My Tunes, my guest is Dr. Henrietta Ewart. Now, you will have seen her, heard her an awful lot over the past 18, 20 months. Is it 20 months? Must be now. I just want to ask you, Henrietta, first of all, thank you again for coming on. But I do want to ask you, how much did this last 20 months derail your plans? How much did it derail everything?
Sadly, quite significantly. It really put a hold on most of the things we were trying to do because we were all diverted to COVID. And of course, not just us in public health, but the vast majority of public health is not about things that my small team can do. It's about working with others across government, third sector, communities to get us all, you know, working together on things. And obviously everybody was derailed by COVID, so not just the public health team, but everyone else got pulled away onto other things, which means that a lot of what we'd hoped to do over this time period since sort of February 2020 really hasn't happened, and we are so hoping that we are nearly back at the point of being able to start getting everything going again. And in a way, the timing now is quite good with the election and a new administration, so we hope that we'll all be, you know, feeling fresh and energized to start working up some really quite exciting policy to develop health and well-being.
We will do a little bit of future gazing at the end of the week, because I think we have to do that. You mentioned almost a revelation of the Clean Air Act being supremely important for national health, and that triggering your interest in doing things that maybe have a national impact on the population rather than one person's poorly chest. You went through a variety of, well, I mean, they were pretty high-powered jobs all the way through. I mean, it didn't take you long to get into the right at the heart of that.
Yes, I mean, I've had a wonderful career progression, really. And, of course, one of the wonderful things about public health is it is so varied. You're never bored, ever. And to a large extent, there is a lot of autonomy for, you know, public health practitioners to actually look at what the issues are and then work with others to try and find local ways of approaching them. Because whilst, you know, there is always a need to look at data, intelligence, what have we actually got here? Is it what we think? Or are some things anecdotal and then not backed up when you look at them? Or sometimes we find things that we weren't expecting when we look at the data. So that's always important. And it's also always important to look at the evidence of what works. Doing something just because it feels like a nice thing to do and we'd like it is not the way to go. You don't drive change by that. So definitely you have to use the skills of critical appraisal, identifying evidence. But then there's always that piece that you also always have to do about how would that work here, or how could we make it work here? What are the things we need to do to make it right for our particular issue?
Now, being someone at the centre of the evidence-gathering network, sometimes you must have uncomfortable truths to deliver to people. I'm not just talking about here, I'm talking about in all your jobs. You have to say, I'm sorry, but this is where we're at. And that can't be easy.
No. And always you have to sort of remember that politics, small and large P, does come in. And you have to go with the art of the possible, because actually you want to have change and improvements, and you have to bring everybody along with you, and just sort of waving a learned paper at them or hitting them over the head with it and saying, well, this paper says this, so you're not doing that, you know, tends not to win hearts and minds, really.
No, I can imagine.
So it's quite an art trying to make sure, you know, you get a sweet spot where everybody is on board, but we're not doing something that is totally contrary to what a good, strong body of evidence says we should be doing.
And draw some colleagues into the room with you.
Yeah.
just for moral support. Let us have today's track. I think we're going to like this.
So today, and this is definitely a trip down memory lane to my teenage years and just beyond, it's Ian Dury and the Blockheads, Reasons to be Cheerful, Part 3.
And what a classic. And you said yesterday you saw the man perform.
Yes, many times.
Oh,
going right back to Kilburn and the High Roads days. And they were always a good gig to go to. Very good for audience participation, etc. So that takes me back to the good old Tally Ho in North Finchley.
Cheerful. Part 3.
1, 2, 3.
Summer Buddy Holly, the working folly, good golly Miss Molly, and boats. Hammersmith Pally, the Bolshoi Bally, jump back in the alley, add nanny goats. 18-wheelers camels, Dominica camels, all other mammals plus equal votes. Seeing Piccadilly, Fanny Smith and Willie, being rather silly, and porridge oaty. A bit of grin and bear it, a bit of come and share it. You're welcome, we can spare it. Yellow socks, too short to be haughty, too nutty to be naughty. Going on 40, no electric shots. The juice of the carrot, the smile of the parrot, a little drop of claret, anything that works. Elvis and Scotty, days when I ain't spotty, sitting on the potty, curing smallpox. Reasons to be cheerful. Part 3. Reasons to be cheerful. Part 3. Reasons to be cheerful. Part 3. Reasons to be cheerful. 1, 2, 3. Reasons to be cheerful. Part 3. Health service glasses, gigolos and brasses, round or skinny bottoms. Taking mum to Paris, lighting up the chalice, wee Willie Harris. Bantu, Stephen Biko, listening to Rico, Harpo, Groucho, Chico. Cheddar, cheese and pickle, the Vincent motorcycle, slap and tickle. Woody Allen, Dali, Dimitri and Pasquale, Bala 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 and Valari. Sunday nights to study, phoning up a buddy, being in my nuddy. Saying okie dokie, sing along a smoky, coming out a chokey. John Coltrane soprano, Eddie Celentano, Bona Carino. Reasons to be cheerful, part 3. Reasons to be cheerful, part 3. Reasons to be cheerful, part 3. Reasons to be cheerful, 1, 2, 3. Yes, yes, dear, dear, perhaps next year, or maybe even never, in which case. Cheerful, part 3. Reasons to be cheerful, part 3.
Saying okie dokie, sing along a smoky, coming out of chuggy. Jocko, Frank, Soprano, Annie Celentano, Juan Acalino. Why don't you get back into bed?
Cheerful.
Why don't you get back into bed? Why don't you get back into bed?
Reasons to be cheerful.
Why don't you get back into bed? Why don't you get back into bed?
Reasons to be cheerful.
Why don't you get back into bed?
Reasons to be cheerful.
One, two, three.
My guest this week on My Tunes is Director of Public Health for us here on the Isle of Man, Dr. Henrietta Ewart. Today, Henrietta, can we talk about a revelation, an amazing light in the sky that said, come to the Isle of Man? What was it? Was it something like that? How did it happen?
I still don't really know.
Okay.
To this day, I was quietly minding my own business in Peterborough. But I had a link to, I was Director of Public Health in Peterborough, but I had a link to a public health consultancy that was part of the NHS then, I think it was still, called Solutions for Public Health. And the then chief executive of DHSC approached Solutions for Public Health and asked if I would be available to do an interim for them because the previous Director of Public Health had decided to retire and at that point was obviously working out their notice. So Solutions for Public Health approached me and asked me if I'd be interested. And I was in two minds because actually it was great in Peterborough. A lot of very interesting challenges and a very interesting place. But then I thought the Isle of Man is a bit different and if I don't take this opportunity now, it kind of feels like that'll be it till I retire. So I thought I'll give it a go. So originally it was only supposed to be an interim. I'm still not entirely clear why my name had come up at all. And I've never really got to the bottom of that because obviously the person that was chief executive at that point left about 6 months after that. And then it was all sort of lost in the mists of time. Anyway, I did the interim role from March 2015 through to December 2016. In about June 16, they decided to advertise substantive. So that was another decision point. Do I throw my hat in the ring or do I say, you know, it's been great, but I'm off now? So again, by that stage, I thought, you know, there's things I've got going that I'd actually like to see through now. So I did apply and obviously got appointed and I'm still sitting here. So.
And we're very grateful for it. Thank you. We talked about the completely different course of events that we've seen with COVID. You were hurtled into the spotlight. Am I right in thinking you've never been under the public gaze so much as over the past 18, 20 months?
Yes. I mean, I've certainly never been sort of the regular public health voice for one specific topic on such an ongoing basis. I mean, obviously, over the years, I've done interviews, for example, about, you know, the prevalence of childhood obesity or, you know, whatever it might be. But that feels very different. And of course, one also has the leisure to get really into the subject and really know all about it. Whereas, of course, with COVID, when it first hit, nobody knew all about it, least of all a DPH on the Isle of Man, or anywhere else for that matter. So it was an extremely interesting learning curve and a great challenge to sort of keep up with the constantly evolving evidence base, which required a totally different approach to continuing professional development, which again is usually possible to do quite leisurely. But with this, it was huge amounts of learning and updating that you had to run in parallel with trying to deliver it in the day job. You couldn't sort of say, right, I'm going off for a week to do some CPD and read about this now. You had to be doing plate spinning, doing it all at the same time.
Well, we appreciate everything you've been able to tell us and keep us on track and keep us up to date. You said it was a huge learning process. I'm assuming there was very little detailed research about, say, Spanish flu after the First World War. Maybe not even that much about the Hong Kong flu in America. So this time around, I'm guessing everybody is writing everything down and making a tremendous amount of information available for what might come next.
Yes, and of course, a lot of it was trying to project what might come next. And of course, we do keep work going on an ongoing basis around what's called pandemic preparedness. But I have to say that that has pretty much entirely been based on preparedness for the next pandemic strain of flu. And of course, the big difference between this and flu was with flu, you know that vaccines are going to be prepared pretty smartly. As soon as they isolate the strains, those vaccines will be prepared just as they are year on year for the ordinary flu, seasonal flu. And also, of course, we have antivirals that work to an extent against flu. So you've got two weapons in your quiver, if you like, two arrows in your quiver for that, which we just didn't have for COVID at all.
Let us take today's piece of music. Now, this has surprised me. This has surprised me. What have you chosen and why?
Right, this is Rammstein Sonne. And I got into Rammstein courtesy of my then quite young teenage children, who were very into Kerrang, which was a big music station back in the day. I think it doesn't even exist anymore, but it was very big back then. And they were into all things rock. So we started going together to exciting things like Ozfest and getting into sort of rock and metal of all types. But Rammstein's album Mutter was very big at that time, and this was a very popular track off it for people who were into, you know, this kind of East German industrial rock, which I believe is the correct name for the genre. Hope I'm not wrong there. And it had a very, very kind of iconic video that went with it on Kerrang, which from memory, I think, featured a version of Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs, but it's perhaps best not to dwell on that. And just to finish off on that, my daughter bought us tickets to go and see Rammstein when they do their England tour. They were supposed to do it 2 years ago, kept being cancelled. We now hold tickets for June next summer in Coventry, so I really hope we're going to get to it.
And if you're living on the east coast of the island, you'll probably hear it from there.
Eins, zwei, drei, vier, fünf, sechs, sieben, nine. Alle warten auf das Licht. Fürchtet euch, fürchtet euch.
auf dein Gesicht, legt sich schmerzend auf die Brust. Das Gleichgewicht wird zum Verlust, lässt sich hart zu Boden gehen und die Welt zählt laut bis 10.
Final My Tunes of the Week with my guest, who all this week has been Dr. Henrietta Ewart, Director of Public Health here on our Isle of Man. Came here by chance, almost.
Fate.
Fate is a good word. I just want to ask you something about all the research and everything that's been going on. We mentioned it yesterday. I'm getting an idea, and this may be completely wrong, and just shoot me down. It's a bit like the space race. Out of the space race, we got Teflon, and we got this, and we got that. All this COVID research, is it going to give us help in other areas of medicine? Are there things that we are discovering that will be very useful elsewhere?
Yes, certainly. I think one of the great things that's come out of this is vaccine technology. Certainly, at the beginning of this, the discussion in the public health networks, which I'm part of across the UK, and I also work very closely with colleagues in the Channel Islands, because obviously you can't just work in isolation, you need those support networks. And at the beginning of this, you know, sort of spring last year, it looked very depressing because people were saying, what are the ways out of this? Herd immunity, well, that's not going to happen, or not for a very long time, and not without an awful lot of loss in terms of, you know, life and morbidity. So what else is there? Vaccines. Well, it's going to be at least 2 years before we've got a usable one of those. And it wasn't. It was, you know, 9 months. So, I mean, that is quite extraordinary. And interestingly, certainly the Oxford work built on technologies that they'd been developing for Ebola, and they were just able to switch into, you know, looking at using the same technology for COVID. And of course, the mRNA technology that we've got now, again, is something that lends itself to adaptation, whether that's to different genotypes, different strains of COVID, or indeed different threats. Because obviously, you know, we've had this, we've had SARS-CoV-2. Over the last 20 years, we started off with SARS, which fortunately didn't lead to the pandemic that it was initially thought that it might or would do. And we don't fully know the reasons for that, but some of it was about the fact that people got very ill very quickly with it, which took them out of circulation and therefore meant that they weren't going around being infectious. Whereas, of course, with COVID, you've got that period when you can be infectious without realising you're ill. And of course, some people don't develop symptoms, so they never even know they've been infectious. So that's why it's, you know, gone pandemic in a way that we were spared with SARS. And then, of course, there's been MERS, the Middle Eastern coronavirus as well. So I think there is a realisation that this is a real and ongoing risk. It's not just a theoretical one.
Let's talk about the Isle of Man again. You came here, interim position, got the full-time gig. Was the Isle of Man what you'd expected? Had you been on visits before?
No, I'd never been here before. My father's family are Irish, actually from County Louth, which I can see on a clear day from Peel, which is nice. And I've spent a lot of time in Ireland. Actually, this is taking us into my final track, interestingly enough, as we'll see. So obviously County Louth, Dublin, I worked in as a junior doctor for a while and absolutely loved it. And I've spent a lot of time in West Cork. And there are some things about the Isle of Man that are actually very reminiscent of that. So it didn't feel, you know, a disjunction, if you like. It felt like, you know, somewhere that I've experienced similar to before. I think either you would love it or hate it, but by the time I was thinking about do I apply for the substantive job, it had kind of got under the skin, both professionally and as a place I enjoyed being. So it was just a natural progression, really.
When you're not talking to us and tearing your hair out or just generally trying to get to grips with the situation, what do you do to unwind?
Walking's my big thing. And obviously, where could I be that would be better?
Yeah.
And what I love about living in Peel is at the weekend, well, once I've parked the car on a Friday, that's it, because I have an abundance of wonderful walks that I can do just out of the front door. I don't need to go anywhere in order to walk. And that is just fantastic.
Before we go to our last track, it's not really a question, it's a statement from George Harrison. All things must pass. These times we're living in will change.
Yes.
They will pass. The Queen said so. It's got to be true. She said it last year in her address to the nation. So we've got to believe her. What's it going to look like downstream?
Okay, so from the pandemic perspective, I think, and, you know, there's no way of calling this. It's, you know, to what extent is one a betting man? But I think based on the way coronaviruses behave, because this is a coronavirus, we're not going to get rid of it. We're not going to get herd immunity. What I hope we're going to get, and certainly I hear this talked about by experts who are far more knowledgeable than I will ever be, we would hope to reach a position of what is known as endemic equilibrium. So we'll have most of the population protected either by vaccine or by prior infection or indeed by both. We know that immunity to coronaviruses wanes over time and we tend to get reinfected. But the reinfections, firstly, don't tend to be so severe, so we may not even notice we've been reinfected. And secondly, they actually provide a natural pep up of the immunity. So hopefully that is the position that we will get to. We can't guarantee that we will ever get to a position where some people do not become ill, seriously ill, and potentially die or have, you know, the long-term sequelae, the long COVID. We can't ever guarantee that for anything. And obviously, although COVID is not seasonal flu, we have to be minded that people do die every year from seasonal flu, and that cannot be avoided. So we will never get into a position where we can ever guarantee that no one will ever again become ill with or die from coronavirus, no. COVID. We will get into a position where we can live with it.
Thank you. Thank you for tackling that. Let's now wrap this up. We've mentioned Ireland, and I think our final track is going to take us to Ireland.
Yes, my final track is by a band called Planxty, and it's West Coast of Clare. And Planxty, what genre would you call them? Folk rock, possibly. Interesting mix of people. They include people who lived and worked for a long time in London, as indeed, you know, that's my father's trajectory, but who obviously stayed close to their Irish roots and produced some wonderful music, which ranges from, you know, new arrangements of very traditional songs and music, and also their own compositions. And this is one which I believe is one of their own compositions. It's a sad song. I think it's about memory of a relationship and place and how place brings that back. So my love of it is because I think it's a beautiful song. For me, it's not linked to a relationship, but it is linked to that nostalgia for place that I have for Ireland, because I've, you know, had so many experiences there, either as, you know, a young person, a young doctor, and then there with my family when my children were young. So it's that whole nostalgic thing about this song that does it for me.
Dr. Henrietta Hewitt, thank you so much for today, for all this week. Some great choices. The diversity has been wonderful. And thank you for being a still small voice of calm over these troubled times. It has not gone unnoticed and it has been appreciated by a great many people.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate you saying that.
I walked to Spanish Point. I knew I'd find you there. I stood on the white strand, and you were everywhere. Vivid memories fade, but the mood still. I wish I could go back and be with you again. In Milltown there's a pub. It's there that I sat down. I see you everywhere, your face is all around. The search for times past contains such sweet pain. I'll banish lonesome thoughts, but they'll return again. I walk along the shore, the rain in my face. My mind is numb with grief. Of you there is no trace. I'll think of this again when in far off lands I roam, walking with you by this cold Atlantic foam. Memories I have of you My mind was running back to the west coast of Clare, thinking of you and the times we had there.
What a selection and what a journey. Thank you so much to Dr. Henrietta Hewitt, my MyTunes guest this week. And keep coming back to manxradio.com for more podcasts appearing every day.